Members and guests, please rise for the invocation by Representative Mitchell and remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Lord, please bless us today in the work we do in the people's house. Guide our discussions and help them be glorifying to you. I pray for safe travels for those who head home later this weekend and comfort for those who stay here away from their community of family and friends. Give us the knowledge and wisdom to stay focused on what is best for our community and state. Thank you. In Jesus' name, amen.
I pledge allegiance to
the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The clerk will take the roll.
Mr. Speaker, 95 members are present. Representatives Bishop, Butcher, Essman, Kazmaier, and Weatherwax are excused.
A quorum is present and the House is ready for business. Are there any introductions? Representative Casey Knutson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can I be off the record now of the journal for the purpose of an introduction, please?
So ordered.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members of the body, I am very pleased to introduce to you all my nephew, Holden Crossland.
Welcome to the House. Speaker Pro Tem Rhonda Knutson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May I be off the record, not of the journal, for the purpose of a big introduction?
So ordered.
In the gallery, I think over here, if they would stand, please, we have students and faculty from the Westby School. There they are. There they are.
Welcome to the House. Representative Tanner Smith.
Thank you, Your Excellency Speaker. May I request to be off the record and out of the journal for purpose of an announcement.
So ordered.
Please join myself tonight at the Delta Colonial Inn. The Montana Logging Association will be having their annual loggers, lumbermen, and legislators reception from 5:30 to 7:30. So dust off those logging boots and tighten up those suspenders. We're going to have a party tonight. See you then.
Representative Galloway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to be off the journal and out of the journal and off the record for an introduction.
So ordered.
Mr. Speaker, in body today, I'd like to introduce number 13 of our 15 grandchildren that's on the floor with us, Roscoe Galloway.
Welcome to the House. Representative Dooling.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I request to be in the record and on the journal for the purpose of an introduction.
So ordered.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Today I have the pleasure of introducing our two pages for this big week today, or this week. First of all, please stand when I call your name. Vanessa Wheeler. Vanessa is a senior from East Helena and attends East Helena High School. She is active in the National Honor Society and Future Farmers of America. Outside of school, she enjoys riding horses, fishing, hunting, making things with wood, and working with animals. She's interested in learning about how the House of Representatives works and seeing how people work together. Her goal is to go to college to be a vet tech and work her way through college by working on a cruise ship in Alaska. She is sponsored by Representative Konauer. And next is Mr. John Goodwin. John is a senior at Capitol High School in Helena. He's active in National Honor Society, Symphonic Band, Pep Band, Student Council, Senior Secretary, Green Club, and the Fly Fishing Club. Outside interests include fishing, hunting, backpacking, Future Fisheries Board, a pianist, Royal Conservatory, FWP Volunteer Hunters Education Instructor, and Trout Unlimited Board Member. You're a very busy boy. He's interested in learning about the legislative process and leadership in state government. His future goal is to attend Carroll College, and he is sponsored by myself. Thank you for being here, you both. Thank you.
Thank you, Pages. Representative Konauer.
Thank you, Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to be off and out, if I might, please.
So ordered.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and members of the legislature. I would like to introduce you to one of the nicest people that ever lived. And I served with him in the legislature back in the 2000s, and he represented Columbia Falls. His name is Doug Cordier. So please recognize him.
Welcome to the House. Representative Gillette.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to be off the record and out of the journal for purposes of an introduction.
So ordered.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Today, I'd like to introduce some of the finest law enforcement from Bozeman up in the galley. From the Bozeman Police Department, Team B Night Shift, Sergeant Anthony Hutchings, Officers Ken Bridge, Nick Schultz, John Ng, and Adam Phillips.
Welcome to the House. Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to be off the record and out of the journal for the purpose of an introduction.
So ordered.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and beloved body. You're welcome. I would like to introduce two people that are very special to me up in the gallery, my beautiful girlfriend, Justine, and her daughter, Amelia.
Welcome to the House. Representative Sprunger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wish to be off and out for the purpose of an introduction, please.
So ordered.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Up in the gallery, and I believe over here, are Lucy and Kitty Jacari, who are from the Kalispell area, outstanding students and ladies who helped me a lot during my campaign. If they could stand up, please.
Welcome to the House. Representative Marler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May I be off the record and out of the journal for the purposes of an invitation?
So ordered.
Everybody, you got an announcement about the legislative trap shoot right before we broke for break. So I want to remind you that on April 1st, no fooling, there is going to be a legislative trap shoot here in Helena. It is the third annual such trap shoot. It's a lot of fun. Everyone is invited, even if you have no experience shooting before, because there'll be someone there to show you how to shoot trap safely. And it is completely free, but we would like you to register just so we know how much ammo and food and stuff to have. So you can see me, or you can see a representative across the way whose name I almost said. For information on registration, but you should have also gotten an invitation in your mailbox. Thanks.
And I will be off the record now, the journal. Members of the committee, I'd like to introduce the Heritage Academy. It's a Christian homeschool co-op from Kalispell, if you guys would stand. Welcome to the House. Seeing no more introductions, order business number one, communications and petitions.
Mr. Speaker, we are Committee on Legislative Administration, having examined the daily journals for days 1 through 10, find the same to be correct. Signed, Representative Caleb Hinkle, Chair. That is all, Mr. Speaker.
Order business number two, reports of standing committees.
None, Mr. Speaker.
Order business number three, reports of select committees.
None, Mr. Speaker.
Order business number four, messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the Senate to inform the House of Representatives of the following actions. The following Senate bills, Senate joint resolutions are on this day, read three several times in past, title and history agreed to, and are herewith transmitted to the House for concurrence. Senate Bill 308, 423, 203, 376, 397, 422, 445, Bogner. Senate Bill 288, 448, Cuff. 504, 374, Curdy. 322, 370, 392, 393, 379, 429, 491, 492, Fitzpatrick. 281, 388, Flowers. 361, 400, Fuller. 398, 447, Gillespie. 327, 481, 482, Glim. 490, 127, 224, 301, 331, 332, 358, 364, 268, 330, 333, Hertz. 354 Brown, 480 Dunwell, 450 Emmerich, 198 Gross, 459 Lynch, 432 Menzella, 483 Pope, 419 Vance, 499 McGilvery, 325, 326, 172, 335, 381, 421, 443 Friedel, 382-424 Mandeville, 416-232 Ellis, 282-328 Lenz, 28-375-462 Lang, 356-436 Heinbaugh, 351-384-385-488 Zolnikov, 455-456-457 Vermeer, 391-452-294-410-411 Usher, 323-369-406-420-464-471-469-500 Trebus, 208-425-426-228-380-444-451-453-454 Small, 373-461 Solomon, 109-313 Regeer, 307-345 Nolan, 277-407-498 Morgeau, Senate Joint Resolution 16 Cuff, 17 Fox, 18 Fuller, 13 and 14 Lang, 15 McGilvery. Sincerely, Marilyn Miller, Secretary of the Senate. That is all, Mr. Speaker.
Order business number 5, messages from the governor.
None, Mr. Speaker.
Order business number 6, first reading commitment of bills.
Mr. Speaker, Senate Joint Resolutions 3, 5, 6, and 7, and Senate Bills 60, 95, 148, 163, 164, 168, 174, 187, 188, 190, 199, 201, 206, 209, 214, 215, 219, 220, 260, and 265 have been read first time and referred to committee. All are posted. That is all, Mr. Speaker.
Order business number 7, second reading of bills. Majority Leader Vinton.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the House resolve itself into a committee of the whole for consideration of business on second reading.
All those in favor say aye. All those opposed, no. And the ayes have it. And I appoint Representative Deming, Chair of the Committee of the Whole, for the day.
Members of the committee, please be in order. Chair recognizes Majority Leader Vinton.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we pass consideration on House Bill 220 for the day.
Without objection, so ordered. Members of the committee, you have before you for your consideration House Bill 189. The clerk will read the title of the bill.
Mr. Chair, House Bill number 189, introduced by Nicola Kakos, a bill for an act entitled An Act Authorizing the Property Tax Assistance Program, increasing the market value to which the program applies, amending sections, and providing an applicability date. Mr. Chair.
Representative Nicola Kakos, what is your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the beloved body. I bring before you today, again, House Bill 189. The Property Tax Assistance Program. This is a great piece of legislation that passed unanimously out of the Tax Committee and with 100 votes. Oh, I'm sorry, yes. I move that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 189, that it recommend the same do pass.
Representative Nicola Kakos.
All right, I'm going to backtrack there. Like I said, this is a great bill, Mr. Chair and body. Came out of the Taxation Committee unanimously, got 100 votes on the floor here. But as we all know, appropriations is a tough place these days. So it came back with a little haircut. I think that haircut was unwarranted. So as a result, Mr. Chair, I move that House Bill 189 be amended and request that amendment number 0189.002.001 be posted and deemed read.
So ordered.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the PTAP is one of the four major ongoing property tax relief programs that are codified in the MCA. There's the property tax credit, as well as disabled veteran tax property tax assistance. As I mentioned last time, PTAP basically exempts a certain amount of home value based on your income from a certain multiplier, 20, 50, or 80. Actually, a 30, 50, or 70 multiplier that gives you a 20, 50, or 80% reduction. The original bill had set that home value at $350,000 in qualifiable property value, and that was amended down to $300,000. So while I was initially excited to have a rite of passage and that good representative for Billings would have amended one of my bills, or has, and I was excited about that, I don't think it was chosen wisely. That number of $350,000 was very deliberate. It was analyzed very closely. We came to that number because that returns the program to what it was doing in 2015. When that program was initiated in 2015, 80% of the people who applied for PTAP qualified under their entire home value. Right now, that's estimated to be about 40% and going lower. So this isn't a big increase at $350,000 of home value. It's basically just keeping it where we were 8 years ago before our housing market went crazy. So basically, again, this actually, if we wanted to keep it exactly right, we'd have to go up to $360,000. This is actually a small reduction, although we do tie the number to, we inflation index this number so we won't fall behind again. So I hope that you'll consider giving this bill a green light, this amendment a green light, and then the bill as well. Mr. Chair.
This is our discussion on the amendment. Representative Mercer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the body. As the sponsor noted, the amendment noted, I think was the one who was the proponent of this amendment in appropriations, and I'll tell you why. If you look at what we're doing in this bill, and keep in mind that whatever we do in this area is a cost shift to other taxpayers, I think we all are supportive of the concept that PTAP serves a useful purpose. And so the question is where are you going to draw the line? And we looked, and the basis for the amendment was to say, well, that the line was $200,000. And we've made a collective judgment that because of inflation in the real estate market, that no longer is an appropriate number. So the question is increasing that number from $200,000 to $300,000 an appropriate adjustment as opposed to $350,000? Obviously, we have taken half the value of where it had been placed before on market value, and with the amendment, we said we're going to change that to $300,000. And you can see how that is going to affect the other formulas in Section 2. So at the end of the day, we are still making a positive move in this direction to ensure that people are covered, but we have to draw the line somewhere. And the higher that line is, the more of a shift you are doing across the other segment of property taxpayers. So it received support in appropriations, and I hope that the full body will look at the $300,000 and say that that is an appropriate change as opposed to the $350,000. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there further discussion? Representative Fern.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Fern.
I'd like to weigh in with my strong support for this amendment. And I think that there is a natural tension that exists looking at what's called a tax shift. I think this year of all years, we're very, very fortunate because whether it's the minority who's presenting ideas or the majority or both of us working together, we're going to present some fairly significant tax savings for our constituents today. And I would say that when you look at this proportionally, the small tax shift that occurs to present very significant savings for our most vulnerable part of our population who own homes, and we compare that to our overall tax savings that we will be bringing most Montana residents, and we may agree or disagree whether it should be weighted on property or it should be weighed on income, but nevertheless, when we're out of here, hopefully at the end of April, we're going to bring forward far more tax savings. And this tax shift is very modest. Whether it's 300,000 home, 350,000 home, it's going to make a very insignificant difference on the taxpayer, especially compared to the overall tax savings they will be receiving this year. So I'd like you to think about that. Support the good sponsor on this bill. Again, as he said, it passed unanimously as it was presented in the always challenging tax committee. This will really help the folks who are most vulnerable in your district. Please vote yes on the amendment. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion on the amendment? Seeing no discussion. Excuse me. Does the sponsor wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to point out that this is already a little bit of a cut at the 350, as I said earlier. So we are going down a little bit. Every single member in this body has voted for this bill as it was presented, at least once, some people twice. The bill, as it was sponsored, had or originally presented, had support from MACO, from various economic development groups, from AARP, from the Realtors Association, from, I mean, it was, people were out the door at this number. And I want to also point out, it's not just a shift. The state takes a not insignificant haircut on the overall number. And the shift has already happened. Okay, so the shift has already happened from high-income, out-of-state people who have come in and pushed housing values around, people on fixed incomes around them, and pushed their taxes up. The shift has already happened because wealthy, dual-income, younger people are voting for all these levies and smashing these people in place. So I like there's a good senator from Great Falls who likes to talk about a waterbed, and we're doing just this shift, and we're shifting. What I'm saying is the shift already happened. All we're doing is pushing the shift back down. Is that a long-term fix? No, but it's what we need to do now. It's the right thing to do now to keep grandma and grandpa from getting pushed off the waterbed. Thank you, Mr. Chair. One last thing. So this is a good bill at 300, okay, but it's a great bill at 350 and this amendment. So let's make this amendment and this bill great again and vote yes. Thank you.
The question now arises on the amendment of Representative Nicola Karkos. Those in favor vote aye. Those opposed vote no. Are there any absentee voters?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bishop votes aye. Representative Butcher votes nay. Representative Essman votes nay. Representative Kazmaier votes nay. Representative Weatherwax votes aye.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Chair, 59 representatives have voted aye, 41 have voted no.
Is there any discussion on the bill as amended? Seeing no further discussion, does the sponsor wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the body. I think I said most of what I was going to say in the amendment and stepped over my shoes, but let's rack up a win for our constituents and take a bill that we can be proud of back to them, and let's send it to the Senate with some momentum. I'd appreciate a green light, Mr. Chair.
The question now arises in a motion, Representative Nicola Karkos, that when the committee does rise and report after having had House Bill number 189 under consideration, I recommend the same do pass. Those in favor of the motion will say aye. Those opposed, no. Are there any absentee votes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bishop votes aye. Representative Butcher votes aye. Representative Essman votes aye. Representative Kazmaier votes nay. Representative Weatherwax votes aye.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Chair, 81 representatives have voted aye, 19 have voted no.
House Bill 189 has passed second reading as amended. Thank you. Members of the committee, you have before you for your consideration House Bill 297. The clerk will read the title of the bill.
Mr. Chair, House Bill number 297, introduced by Welch, a bill for an act entitled An Act Revising Video Gambling Machine Taxes, providing definitions, providing rulemaking authority, amending sections, and providing an effective date and applicability date. Mr. Chair.
What is your pleasure, Representative Welch?
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 297, that it recommend the same do pass.
Representative Welch.
Mr. Chair, members of the body, before you we have House Bill 297. This is a bill that you've seen previously. It passed through this body overwhelmingly. After the vote, I had a good senator from Billings talk to me a little bit about the language, whether we had it exactly the way it should be. If you remember, this bill has to do with gaming losses on video machines and how they're handled and whether owners can take a loss when they lose money. For example, if they have $800 that's all been paid into the machine and somebody gets a $1,000 winner and that negative money. So that's where we were. The bill, like I say, passed well. We worked on the language. It went back to appropriations. They worked on a little bit more. They deleted the section at the request of the department. If you look, subsection 3. And the bill is the same. Nothing else changed on the bill. It's still the same bill. It just clarified a lot of the language and definitions. So I'll ask you for a green light, please.
Is there discussion? There being no further discussion, does the sponsor wish to close? Sponsor has closed. The question now arises on the motion of Representative Welsh that when this committee does rise and report after having House, under consideration House Bill 297, recommend the same do pass. Those in favor of the motion will vote aye. Those opposed vote no. Are there absentee votes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bishop votes aye. Representative Butcher votes aye. Representative Essman votes aye. Representative Kazmaier votes aye. Representative Weatherwax votes aye.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Chair, 97 representatives have voted aye. 3 have voted no.
House Bill number 297 has passed the House. Second reading, sorry. Members of the committee, you have before you for your consideration House Bill 346. The clerk will read the title of the bill.
Mr. Chair, House Bill number 346, introduced by Windy Boy, a bill for an act entitled, An Act Revising the Tribal Computer Programming Boost Scholarship Program, consolidating administration of the program at the Department of Labor and Industry, expanding the teacher professional development component of the program to include elementary and middle school teachers, providing an appropriation, amending section, providing an immediate effective date. Mr. Chair.
What is your pleasure, Representative Windy Boy?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 346, that I recommend the same do pass.
Representative Windy Boy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the last session, we had this computer program scholarship passed, and we completed it, and we have some remarkable outcomes of this particular program. And I worked with the governor's office at that time, as well as Department of Labor, and because of the way things have occurred over the last 2 years, it was recommended that we do the actions that we've done, moving it from the OPI to the Department of Labor Industry, because it was we saw it would be a bit better fit. And so with that, with the scholarship program, is for the teachers to get the training as needed in Bozeman. So no offense to you Grizzly fans, but anyways, this is a good move. I think this would make it more efficient for our purposes, and the amount on the fiscal note is in the governor's budget, and we expanded this from high school down to grade school and junior high. So I ask for a green vote. Thank you.
Is there discussion? There being no further discussions, the sponsor wish to close? The sponsor has closed. The question now arises in a motion of Representative Windy Boy that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 346, they recommended that the same do pass. Those in favor of the motion vote aye. Those opposed vote no. Are there absentee votes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bishop votes aye. Representative Butcher votes aye. Representative Essman votes aye. Representative Kazmaier votes aye. Representative Weatherwax votes aye.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Chair, 97 representatives have voted aye, 3 have voted no.
House Bill number 346 has passed second reading. Members of the committee, you have before you for your consideration House Bill 352. The clerk will read the title of the bill.
Mr. Chair, House Bill number 352, introduced by Barker, a bill for an act entitled An Act Establishing Early Literacy Targeted Interventions, Providing Legislative Findings, Purpose and Intent, Providing Definitions, Establishing Parameters and Funding for 3 Voluntary Early Literacy Targeted Intervention Programs, Establishing Duties of the Board of Public Education, the Superintendent of Public Instruction, in Administering the Programs, Establishing Reporting Requirements for Participating School Districts, and Superintendent of Public Instruction, Providing an Appropriation Amending Section, and Providing effective dates. Mr. Chair.
Representative Barker, what is your pleasure?
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 352, that it recommends the same do pass.
Representative Barker.
Mr. Chair, members of the body, early literacy is vital for our kids to benefit from instruction during their middle and high school years, and of course, subsequently, to be able to perform and enjoy higher-paying jobs in the workforce. It's also necessary for critical thinking in our republic. It can generally be said that up to third grade, kids are learning to read, and after third grade, they're reading to learn. Only 46% of Montana's third through eighth graders are reading proficient at grade level. Only 46%. That increases the expense and decreases the effectiveness of our K-12 education by requiring additional interventions in middle and high school. It also can't go unnoticed that the average reading level of our prison population is fourth grade. I don't have the data to show causation, but there's definitely correlation. And that's just one small example of the cost on our society and taxpayers for kids failed by our education system. This bill does 4 things. It changes the current law that allows any 4-year-old to enroll in kindergarten based on undefined exceptional circumstances by directing the Board of Public Education to establish an evaluation methodology to determine kids at risk of failing to meet reading proficiency at third grade. Why third grade? That's the first standardized test that our kids take, is at third grade level. So we're not establishing another test here. We're utilizing that standardized test that's already available, and we're adding additional accountability to the process. Number 2, school districts who choose, this is an opt-in program, those school districts who choose to adopt targeted interventions are authorized 3 tools. Those 3 tools are a home-based literacy program. And yes, homeschool families can use that home-based program. They don't have to participate in any other component of this or our public school system. Second tool is an early literacy jumpstart program. That jumpstart program is 4 weeks. That's authorized at 1/4 average number belonging for those school districts who choose to use it. And that's prior to kindergarten to be able to get those kids up to where they need to be prior to starting kindergarten. And it's also available for in between every grade up through third grade. So in other words, there's 4 weeks that's authorized for the Jumpstart program prior to kindergarten, between kindergarten and first grade, first and second, second and third. And then third is a classroom-based literacy program where students, kids who are identified through an assessment as being at risk, can enroll at the age of 4 in kindergarten. And I remind you,
1 minute,
any kid under exceptional circumstances can enroll now. This allows parents who choose to evaluate their 4-year-old who is determined at risk to take advantage of this program. It also requires school district trustees to closely monitor the program and the Office of Public Instruction to collect data from school districts providing early intervention programs and report to the Interim Budget Committee annually. Not only is this a great approach to provide better outcomes for our kids, there is a strong business case to support this legislation to dramatically increase accountability and the return on investment for our taxpayers. I urge a strong do pass and appreciate your consideration.
Is there a discussion? Is there a discussion? There being no further discussion, the sponsor wishes to close. Excuse me, Representative Beatty.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I rise in strong support of this bill being offered by my friend from Carbon County. During the past interim, the Education Interim Budget Committee, in evaluating program performance across its agencies, discovered that there was a growing trend of children under 4 years old being admitted into the public schools and having A and B pay, that is to say state funding and local taxpayer dollars accompany that. This was puzzling because by state law, we are not allowed to, or districts are not allowed to receive funding for preschool programs. And between about 2016 or 2017, the typical number of students under 4 years old that were being admitted and funded was around 100, something less than that. And it has been growing at a steady rate such that in the last year it was around 1,200 students. We discovered what was going on was a rather elastic interpretation of what is meant by exceptional circumstances. I think school districts were responding to what they perceived as a need for early childhood intervention, but were doing it in a unprogrammed manner without accountability. When we pointed this out, or I brought this to my friends from Carbon County's attention, he went right to work and came up in collaboration with a few of our other colleagues around the room here, what I consider to be model legislation. It gets at the problem of early childhood education. It is targeted towards getting students to literacy at an appropriate age before it's too late for them to progress or to, in a sense, be saved. And what I think is remarkable about this program is that it requires assessment of the program. All too often in government, we fund programs and then turn to the next thing. This is a great program because not only are we funding something, but we have explicit expectations. And I think that my friend from Carbon County, once again, should be commended for putting together this great legislation. I urge your green light on this.
Is there further discussion, Representative Falk?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I have a question for the sponsor.
Will the sponsor yield?
I yield.
Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Sponsor, I'm looking at the fiscal note, and I think it's number 18. I'm still kind of confused, I guess, on the implementation of this bill, what you're proposing. But it says here that we need approximately 50 teachers. I'm not sure how that works in actual execution on the ground, but can you speak to that, that additional teacher need and how that would look as your bill plays out? And it looks like it wouldn't actually go into effect until the second fiscal year of this next biennium, if I read it correctly.
Representative.
Mr. Chair, my colleague, I don't necessarily agree with all the assumptions that are made in the fiscal note to begin with, as you can see by the rebuttal that I provided. I think that requirement for an additional 50 teachers, especially coming out of the gates or near implementation of this program, is a false assumption. I will remind you that already school districts can enroll four-year-olds in school based on exceptional circumstances. So that's a very loose definition. It's a very loose standard. What we're doing with this bill is tightening up that definition and requiring an assessment and implementing a process that will establish and maintain accountability coming back, forcing the trustees to evaluate the program on an annual basis and for those school districts to provide that information to OPI, Office of Public Instruction, to be able to provide that information back to us. So I don't agree with that assumption, and I don't, in the same vein, agree with the technical note that's listed on page 5, which is associated with the assumption on 50 additional teachers.
Is there further discussion? Representative Gillette.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for the bill sponsor.
Does the bill sponsor yield?
I yield.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good bill sponsor. I'm still trying to wrap my head around what this bill does as well. I know a school district who voted to start, I'll call it pre-K, I guess, four-year-olds. Even some three-year-olds can go in there. So they have a whole classroom dedicated to that. It's not just like a handful of three- or four-year-olds. It's like what we would kind of consider pre-K. So does this bill eliminate a school's ability to do that? And if so, what happens to the school districts that are already doing this?
Mr. Chair, my colleague, thanks for the question. It would eliminate their ability, especially as you mentioned, third three-year-olds. In fact, the three-year-olds are not authorized by current statute. So whatever they're doing in that school district, they would have to be doing with local funds. But what we've established for the implementation of this program is July 1st of 2024. We did not want to cause a whiplash effect on the school districts or the education of those kids who are already enrolled in those kindergarten programs. So what we're doing is allowing a year for those school districts to develop the program, identify that they want to be a part of the program. It's also given a year for Office of Public Instruction to establish the reporting mechanisms that they need, and it also allows the Board of Public Education the time that they need to develop the assessment. If you had a chance to take a look at the bill, that's one thing that I didn't point out in the opening, is that the Board of Public Education is required to put together an assessment that will be used statewide. So the school districts don't have the latitude, as they do now, to determine what an exceptional circumstance is. They're required to use that assessment standard that is developed by the Board of Public Education. Mr. Chair.
Is there further discussion? Representative Rexton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I thought I'd like to clarify a little bit about the assessment. We're not talking about an assessment such as the SBAC or NAEP assessment when we talk about it in this bill. We talk about formative assessment, which is different than summative assessment. The formative assessment has to do with discrete skills for reading that are ascertained by kids over the period of time it takes to be a proficient reader. So these assertion of skills, there's a certain subset of them required for kindergarten, for first grade, for second grade, for third grade. And we will keep track of those skills on a continuing basis and be able to report back through OPI's collection of that data the success rate of keeping kids on track for that reading proficiency. That is the nuts and bolts of the bill, and it's very, very important part of this bill to see how our money is profiting our children and preparing them for upper grade learning. So I thought I should clarify that assessment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is there further discussion? Representative Kearns.
Mr. Chair, question for the sponsor.
The sponsor yield?
I yield.
Mr. Representative?
Chair, Mr. Chair, sponsor. So I'm reading this bill, and I mean, we see in here a whole bunch of basically formalized things of data collection, and then we have I guess I'm confused on the targeted intervention that actually would be happening. So maybe walk me through how we see, for example, the A and B funding shifting or something like that to actually provide real and meaningful benefit other than just getting data for our state.
Representative.
Mr. Chair, and my colleague, I have served as a school administrator and a school board member for a number of years, but I'd like to re-refer this question to my colleague in seat 52 who can speak to this from an educator perspective.
Representative Rexon, do you yield?
I yield. Could you frame your question one more time, please?
Representative?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rexon, or I'm sorry, Representative. As I'm looking at this bill, all I see is a lot of data collection for the state, and then also going forward from that is maybe some differences in the A and B kind of thing. But I guess my question is, what are we actually doing to, other than a fancy way of getting data collection, get to the actual root that we all know pretty much is, well, we have some deficiencies. How are we fixing these deficiencies?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Representative, I'll give you a really practical example. At kindergarten, one of the very most important skills for kids is phonemic awareness. If they cannot hear the sounds and they cannot associate those sounds with letters, that's a problem. In first grade, they learn discrete skills such as long vowels, short vowels, diphthongs. And by the end of first grade, reading at about 60 words a minute. At the end of second grade, they need to read about 100 words a minute and have vowel combinations of various kinds that they learn. That is something that teachers can monitor and do monitor to some extent in their classrooms. I think of a former school district that I used to work for that does that very systemically. And this information tells teachers whether kids are on track versus not on track. That information is just collected by OPI to give us a perspective of how well we are doing across the state. That's really all that is. And I would clarify again, this is formative assessment. If they don't have these skills, then they're not going to be able to read proficiently. They have to have those skills in place in order to read proficiently as they go into upper grades. So it's a benefit to the local teachers in the classroom, and it's only a benefit to us when we collect this and see how successful we have been collectively across the state.
Mr. Chair, follow up.
Follow up to you, Representative, do you continue to yield?
Yes.
Representative.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I guess, so going to third grade, doing this targeted intervention, at what point are we actually helping those who we've identified as having deficiencies?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, these formative assessments are fairly often, about every 6 weeks, depending on how the teacher is delivering instruction, and you're going to know almost immediately. So those targeted interventions are going to take place in the classroom immediately by most teachers. Some kids are going to just take longer time period to get those skills in place, and that's the reason for maybe the home-based program as well as the Jumpstart program. So it varies. You know, every student is different. But it will benefit the teachers in the classroom. And it will benefit us as a state and put us on a trajectory where we don't have to have remedial classes at some of those higher levels.
Is there further discussion? Representative Sprunger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question for the Chair of Section E. For the Chair of Section E, please.
Will the Chair yield? Representative Beattie.
I yield.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, You're the expert on funding for education. Can you speak to us a little bit? I think you folks looked into this. Can you speak to us a little bit about the funding, some of the, maybe answer some of the questions here around however we're calling it, if we're calling it early kindergarten or preschool?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I'd be delighted to answer that question. I got into this subject, so I had to make myself an expert when I discovered an anomaly in the data that I described to you a bit earlier. Here's the way state law currently stands. State law provides for funding for kindergarten experiences. It explicitly does not allow funding for preschools. So, however, there is nothing in state law that keeps a school district from creating a preschool program. They simply will not receive base funding. They won't receive state funding, and they will not receive the ability to permissively levy to support that. So, for instance, in the case of my friend from Gallatin County, a school district may have made a decision to do that, but should not be receiving state funding for that purpose because it's specifically precluded by law. And so what this targeted intervention program that has been brought forward in this particular bill does is it does provide a provision for providing funding for these targeted opportunities. It places it in law so that when we have preschool activities being funded across the state, they are being lawfully funded. Now, I want to be clear that I don't believe anyone is deliberately trying to break the law right now, but we have a number of districts across the state that are running where essentially preschool programs. They're admitting them under exceptional circumstances, but the exceptional circumstance law was designed primarily, and its effect was primarily to allow children that were near 5 years old to join a kindergarten cohort. That's the way it was when I was a school board trustee some years ago, and I think that's the reason that we had a stable number of under 100 for year after year after year. A reinterpretation of what constituted an exceptional circumstance arose, causing people to run, they called them various things, but they were effectively preschool programs. And we can argue whether preschool is important or not. I personally think well-crafted early childhood education is an important thing to do, but it needs to be done lawfully. This bill provides us a lawful means to approach early childhood education, and as I said earlier, I think provides a model for how to intervene and affect the students that are most at risk for not being literate at age 3, which this copious data shows means that they will not achieve literacy throughout their lives.
Thank you. Follow up for the sponsor, Mr. Chair.
Representative.
Mr. Chair.
Do you yield?
Yield.
Go ahead.
Thank you, good sponsor. I know we've heard a lot about how we're assessing along the way. Can you clarify for us exactly how you identify the students that would participate in a program such as this, please?
Mr. Chair, FL Representative, they're identified by an assessment that will be developed by the Board of Public Education. If parents choose to have their student, their kid evaluated, then they will be assessed by the program. Again, once assessed, if they choose to, and they're at risk for being able to achieve proficiency, reading proficiency by third grade, then they can choose 1, 2, or 3 or none of the tools that are offered, again, only for those school districts who choose to opt in. In between those kindergarten, first, second, third grade years, that assessment will be done, as my colleague in C52 had mentioned, that assessment will be done not with a standardized test, but based on that teacher's assessment. That teacher who works with that student every day knows what their skill sets are, knows what their risks are, knows what needs to happen. That will spark a conversation with the parent. Again, parent's choice whether or not they want to take the recommendation of the teacher to enroll their child, that student, in a 4-week jumpstart program in between kindergarten and first and second, or second and third.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Do you continue to yield?
I yield.
Go ahead.
Thank you, good sponsor. And can you clarify for us, it looked to me when I read through this that there is an option for parents to do some of this at home. Can you speak to that, please?
Mr. Chair, FL Representative, the program to be done at home, I can't mention any vendors by name on the floor, but there's some very reliable programs that have great data There's $1,000 per student that's set aside for that program. More, of course, could be spent by the local school district if they wanted to, but with state funds, it would be $1,000 for that program. Some of those vendors, for example, would provide a ruggedized laptop that requires the student to log on, and it also requires parental involvement to be able to unlock the computer. So that's increasing the engagement between the parent and their child. And the efficacy of that is not just for that kindergarten time frame, but also all the way up through second grade. So that I wouldn't think of that $1,000 as a one-time expense that's only good for 1 year. Most of those, or some of those programs that are available, that $1,000 would be spent on, for example, a ruggedized laptop that would be useful from kindergarten all the way through learning that would occur at the second grade level.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is there further discussion? Representative Stuart Paragoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question for the sponsor.
Does the sponsor yield?
I yield.
Representative Stuart Paragoy.
Just to clarify, because I didn't get, I don't think you clarified, but for those school districts that are already doing this successfully under the special circumstances, will they be able to continue after 2024?
Mr. Chair, my good colleague, seat 64, yes, they would be able to continue, but it would be based on that more rigorous standard and with the follow-up and the assessments that are put in place and required by this bill. That's the reason that we put the transition period, if you will, the implementation date of this language on July 1st, 2024, is to be able to allow everyone to adjust to that new system without disruption to the education of the kids in those school districts.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Does the sponsor continue to yield?
I yield.
Go ahead.
In preparing this bill, did you look at the success rates of those schools that are already participating and providing readiness for kindergarten?
Mr. Chair, good colleague, that's a great question. That's one of the things that we really want to get at with this bill is we don't know what the efficacy is for those tax dollars that are currently being spent.
All right, thank you. Mr. Chair, I'd like to speak to the bill.
Representative Stuart Paragoy.
Mr. Chairman, body, I am very concerned that there are, if they have not done the due diligence in terms of looking at those school districts that are already invested in this process and that they do have successful programs, we need to make sure that they are safeguarded and what they have decided to do for the at-risk population that they're working with is provided the opportunity to move forward. I know for one that in my district, the elementary school has opted both in Crow Agency as well as in Hardin, and particularly in Crow Agency, I do know for a fact that the readiness program, primer or whatever you want to call it, has been successful. The population there is a high at-risk population, and they've gone through the pre-K into third grade, and they did make movement. They did are reading at third grade level, but it is reading is a process, and the most important aspect of it is that early intervention, which begins from birth to three, is important, just as looking at 3 to 5 years of age. And during this process, where the two philosophies clash sometimes is in the early childhood aspect, looking at the national the NAEYC standards and looking at those things, looking at developmentally appropriate practice, being able to work with the existing school programs or the early childhood programs, particularly for at-risk students, is Head Start. And so they go through a process of identifying these students. So we're not starting from scratch. This is my biggest concern, is that if it's going to penalize those school districts that are already successful in this process and not collaborating with the early childhood programs out there that are working with the school, at-risk school population, which Head Start and some of the other programs are working with, then I don't know if we need to have a bill like this or it needs to be amended. So I'm not sure how I'm going to vote. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there further discussion? Representative T. Smith.
Thank you. I'd just like to speak to the bill. Having served on the school board for many years as well, you know, this is something we dealt with at the board level, and I appreciate what my good colleague and friend is trying to do to fix this. The issue that arrives, you know, growing up on the mean streets of Stevensville with reading and math, they divvied us up into three different groups back in the 70s and 80s. And now with all this inclusion and everybody's got to get along, what we're finding is kids are all in the same group and the kids are falling through the cracks. So we need to kind of get back to how we taught things in the old days, where you divvy up the kids, you know, the high reading group, the middle reading group, the lower reading group, where the kids that need the help can get the help in a private school setting. I don't know if we need to be hiring more teachers and getting our kids in school even earlier, because now you're going to have four-year-olds, basically, with all the daycare issues. Parents are just going to put their kids in this early childhood education, which I don't think is the best for the kids. They'd be by their parents as long as they can, especially in those 0 to 5 age range. So I will be a no on this one, fortunately.
Is there further discussion? Representative Gunderson.
Mr. Chair, I move to foreclosure.
So there's been a motion for cloture. Not sure how to do this, but all those in favor of cloture vote aye. All opposed, say nay. Do we take absentee votes too?
No.
Okay. Would the clerk read the, I can't see what the results are.
Mr. Chair,
okay. No absentees. All right. It appears as if cloture has passed.
Mr. Chair, 77 representatives have voted aye, 16 have voted no.
Okay. No further discussion. The sponsor wishes to close.
Mr. Chair, I do.
Go ahead,
thank
Representative.
Mr. Chair, I'll use the opportunity to close to just clear up a few items of confusion, I believe. Number one, this program, this bill does nothing to provide funding for kids who are 0 to 3. Absolutely no funding from the state. And also, just to clear up any confusion from the comments from my good colleague in seat 64, this program does not affect Head Start programs that may be out there in any way. And this program will also not change anything that the local school districts are doing to improve early childhood literacy. In fact, it gives them more tools and more resources to be able to do so. I'll remind the body that by constitution, the legislature has a limited role in education. This is a local control state. Our school boards have almost all of the authority as it relates to curriculum. So this bill cannot be too precise and too direct in addressing exactly how early childhood literacy will be addressed. That would be an overstep of our constitutional role as the legislature. What we're simply doing here is we're adding additional accountability when taxpayer dollars from the state are being used for early childhood literacy, and we're correcting a gap in our statute right now that allows any school district to define exceptional circumstance however they choose. So with that said, I would just ask that and remind you that I believe this is a great approach to provide better outcomes for our kids, but it's also makes a fantastic business case to be able to dramatically increase accountability and return on investment for our taxpayers. I urge a do pass. Thank you.
The question now arises in a motion, Representative Barker, that when this committee does rise and report after having had House Bill number 352 under consideration, recommend the same do pass. Are there absentee votes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bishop votes aye. Representative Butcher votes aye. Representative Essman votes no. Representative Kazmaier votes aye. Representative Weatherwax votes aye.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Chair, 74 representatives have voted aye, 26 have voted no.
House Bill 352 has passed second reading. Members of the committee, you have before you for your consideration House Bill 355. Clerk will read the title of the bill.
Mr. Chair, House Bill number 355, introduced by Fitzpatrick, a bill for an act entitled An Act Creating the State Local Infrastructure Partnership Act of 2023, providing for grants to eligible entities for infrastructure projects, setting up a grant process, requiring a percentage of matching funds, providing for oversight, addressing cost overruns and misappropriation of funds, setting grant limits, providing an appropriation, providing for allocations to counties, and providing an immediate effective date. Mr. Chair.
What is your pleasure, Representative Fitzpatrick?
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee does rise and report after having under consideration House Bill 355, that it recommend the same do pass.
Mr. Representative Chairman. Fitzpatrick.
Members of the body, I bring you today House Bill 355, the State Local Infrastructure Partnership Act of 2023. My interest in infrastructure was greatly accelerated during the campaign period, where I was exposed to infrastructure problems throughout my district. One day of a scheduled campaign forum in Phillipsburg, the main water supply system to the town ruptured, and the community was without drinking water for about 18 hours. That situation is not unique to Phillipsburg. It's present virtually in every community in Montana, in every county of the state. The state of Montana has over $1 billion in deferred maintenance, and this session, because there's a significant amount of money available, the state will be able to make a major dent in that backlog of repairs. While there are no corresponding numbers for local governments, the amount of maintenance needed is immense. I hope that this bill will help address these needs. The purpose of this bill is to take a portion of the current general fund surplus and send it back home to local governments all across the state to fix existing infrastructure. It's focused on hard goods, water and wastewater systems, streets, buildings, streetlights, airports, and the like. Section 3 of the bill contains the appropriation. It's $267 million, and it includes the estimated cost of the fiscal note. Section 4 describes the criteria for allocating the funds to the different counties. When I was putting this bill together, I needed to do something that was objective so that all counties would be treated fairly. And after going through a number of different ideas, I settled on two major variables: per capita income, which is a measurement of the relative wealth of a county, and per capita taxable value, which is a measure of its capacity to tax. I then created essentially a rank order of every county, starting with the richest to the poorest, 1 through 56, on both variables, and I allocated a dollar amount starting at $150 for the richest county on each variable. Then, as you step down the line, you get an additional $3 for every step. So county number 2 is 153, county number 3 is 156, all the way down to 356, where you get to $315. Now, I then took those values, added them together, and averaged them. There's a sheet that I had the sergeants pass out that shows the allocation process for three counties right here in Helena. If you have it with you, take a look at Jefferson County. It ranks 23rd on per capita income. Under this methodology, that's worth $216. It ranks 41st on per capita taxable value. That's 270. You add them together, you get a total of 486 divided by 2, and you get $243. You multiply the $243 times the population of the county, and you get an allocation for that county of a little over $3 million. That particular allocation method does basically two things. It creates a certain more balance or equality between the power of the poorer counties and the richer counties by giving the poorer counties more per capita. And it then allocates the money, most of the money go to the larger counties. All of the money for the counties is shown in Section 12. The process will be that the counties will act as a clearinghouse for the grant process. They will hold a public hearing, send a priority list to Helena. The Department of Commerce will administer the law using the same kind of form of process that they use for the other grant programs that they have. Thank you, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Representative. Is there a discussion? Representative Tuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members of the body, I believe that House Bill 355 is good legislation, and I think it's solid policy. As the good sponsor talked about, this spreads infrastructure dollars, state infrastructure dollars, throughout Montana, really to every corner of our state, including a minimum of, I believe it's $300,000 for the very smallest counties. And the priorities for these infrastructure projects aren't coming from this house or the house across the way or anybody in this building or in state government bureaucracy. They're being determined by local government officials where they should be determined. And the truth is that local government officials also have a stake in the game. They have skin in the game. Local match is required for every single one of the projects that will be constructed with this legislation, local match of 25% of the overall total cost. Let's remember that building our infrastructure is building our economy in Montana. I encourage everybody to vote yes on this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Is there further discussion? Representative Brewster.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is a great bill. I think it takes care of a lot of issues where you have problems between counties and cities and ditches that run through cities and all those kind of things that nobody wants to take responsibility for, but this has a lot of flexibility to it, and I think it could take care of a lot of those things that people sometimes fight over, but if it breaks, they're all going to pay for it. So thank you. Have a green vote.
Thank you, Representative. Is there further discussion? Representative Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the body. Today, I want you to remember three words when you think about this bill, and that's jobs, jobs, jobs. You know, as my former colleague from Butte that used to reside in Seat 10 would often say, there's nothing better than the smell of diesel fuel in the morning. And what's that mean? That means that work's getting done in your community. So if you want to afford your community and all of our communities in a fair way with good infrastructure products, you vote green today. Let's give our communities the opportunity to smell that sweet smell of diesel fuel in the morning and get some jobs done in our community. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Representative Spronger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would say this is a great opportunity for each and every one of you to bring home some much-needed support and to be a hero in your community, and it's not every day that each one of us gets to do that. I would vote green. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Further discussion? Does the sponsor wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this bill is somewhat unique among the bills that have come through the legislature. In this case, every county in Montana participates, and it provides benefits to people throughout the state. The decision regarding what projects to be funded are all made at the local level. It's complete local control. Every county determines its own destiny. I believe that every legislator voting for this bill will not be the least bit harmed by that vote. You're looking out for the folks back home, and that's always appreciated. When I was campaigning this past summer and fall, the thing I heard most when I was out on the doors and at various meetings was my constituents saying, go to Helena and fix things and work with people from the other party to get something done for Montana. I think this bill not only honors that particular commitment, but honors a commitment that we all made when we were elected. In this bill, we have a wide range of political philosophies, which are demonstrated in many different ways. But when you get right down to it, there is no Republican way for fixing a sewer system, no Democratic way for fixing a roof. Its infrastructure is broken. It needs to be fixed. Let's fix it. Thank you.
The question now arises, a motion of Representative Fitzpatrick, excuse me, that when this committee does rise and report after having had House Bill 355 under consideration and recommend the same do pass. All those in favor vote aye. Those opposed vote no. Are there absentee ballots?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bishop votes aye. Representative Butcher votes aye. Representative Essman votes aye. Representative Kazmaier votes aye. Representative Weatherwax votes aye.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Chair, 86 representatives have voted aye, 14 have voted no.
House Bill 355 has passed second reading. Members of the committee, you have before you for your consideration House Bill number 362. The clerk will read the title of the bill.
Mr. Chair, House Bill number 362, introduced by Baum, a bill for an act entitled An Act Revising Laws Related to the Crisis Intervention Team Training Program, requiring the program to have a statewide coordinator, providing an appropriation, amending section, and providing effective dates. Mr. Chair.
What is your pleasure, Representative Baum?
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 362, that it recommend the same do pass.
Representative.
Good afternoon, fellow representatives. I hope everyone had the opportunity to refresh and get healthy during our transmittal break as we start round two. Speaking of health and good mental health, I bring before this body refreshed from appropriations House Bill 362. We've heard this bill before. Again, it's to increase funding for crisis intervention team training, known as CIT. The only change to the bill from Appropriations Committee was the addition of some additional collaborative language. I would like to give a nod to my fellow representatives in seats 16 and 96 for their cooperative efforts in amending this bill and formalizing coordination that was already occurring between the Board of Montana Board of Crime Control and DPHHS to prevent duplication of efforts and further the monitoring of the program outcomes. With that, I encourage you all to vote green. Thank you.
Is there discussion? Representative Mercer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee.
Representative.
I want to speak to the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to have everyone focus on first the title of the bill, which notes that this is designed to hire a statewide coordinator. And then I'd ask you to go back to Section 2 on page 3. And what you'll see there is that we are committing to $600,000 over the biennium. And more importantly, we are committing to a long-term, that number in the long-term base budget for the Board of Crime Control. What the bill doesn't do is it doesn't explain that we're already through 16-12-111-4B subsection little 7. We're already spending $150,000 in each year of the current biennium. So this isn't something that we are failing to do. And you can tell that because this bill amends 447-110. It's existing statutory language that says we want crisis intervention team training. The question is do we need to spend $600,000 in each year of the biennium for 24 and 25 and in the future to do that? I'm going to vote no largely because I think the $150,000 that we are spending right now to advance the purposes of 447-110 is adequate and we don't need to do anything more than that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative. Is there further discussion? Is there further discussion? Does the sponsor wish to close?
Sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative.
This is to further expand on an already very successful program. The goal is to get as many first responders, law enforcement officers trained in these de-escalation techniques. And it is successful. It's proven successful, and this does save lives. The reason for the increase is we want to broaden and expand not only our community stakeholders, our behavioral health providers, in the individual local communities. And that is so important because each local community has their own specific resources and providers that can provide assistance in this training. Again, this is to meet that person that is having that critical behavioral health crisis to deal with it safely and respond to it in a way that we can divert them immediately to services versus incarceration. It's safety of the community, safety of the officers, and it is a positive goal going forward. I recommend, encourage a green vote. Thank you.
Question now arises in motion, Representative Baum, that when this committee does rise and report after having into consideration House Bill 362, recommend the same do pass. Those in favor of the motion vote aye. Those opposed vote no. Are there absentee votes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bishop votes aye. Representative Butcher votes aye. Representative Essman votes no. Representative Kazmaier votes no. Representative Weatherwax votes aye.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Chair, 55 representatives have voted aye, 45 have voted no.
House Bill 362 has passed second reading. Members of the committee, you have before you for your consideration House Bill 375. The clerk will read the title of the bill.
Mr. Chair, House Bill number 375, introduced by Fitzpatrick, a bill for an act entitled An Act Appropriating Funds to Pave a Portion of Lost Creek Road at Lost Creek State Park, providing conditions for the appropriation, providing an appropriation, allowing allocations to the Department of Commerce to be used for improving a road to a state park, amending section, providing effective date and transmission date. Mr. Chair.
It was your pleasure, Representative Fitzpatrick.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee does rise and report after having under consideration House Bill 375, that it recommend the same do pass.
Representative Fitzpatrick.
Members of the body, House Bill 375 is I brought to you at the request of Anaconda Deer Lodge County. It proposes to pave a county road providing access to Lost Creek State Park. As proposed in the bill, the county and the state will each contribute $500,000 to the project. The county will manage the project, and most importantly, it has agreed to accept all of the risk for any cost overruns. There will be no supplemental appropriation for this project if it runs over budget, and that language is in the bill. There is precedent for this bill. Back in 2003, the county and the Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks entered into a memorandum of understanding to pave a portion of the road. That project was completed and the MOU terminated in 2004. That particular stretch of pavement is in bad shape and it needs to have a paving overlay, and the rest of the project would be paved, the parts that are not paved. When this bill was drafted, it sought funding from DFWP once again, but the agency had a hissy fit. One staffer tried to con me by claiming that the 5-mile paving project was merely a maintenance project and the county was solely responsible for doing that work rather than considering it a capital project. I have to tell you, when that happened, I was completely dismayed that someone from an executive branch agency would try to take advantage of a freshman with 4 weeks of experience. Then we went to the hearing, and the department came in and testified as an informational witness. It did everything humanly possible except drop a bucket of slop on my head to kill the bill. After talking about this issue with length with some of the members of the committee and seeing the volume of emails that were coming in here on other bills related to fish, wildlife, and parks, we decided to change the funding source to the bed tax, and the tourist industry representatives had no objection. There is $92 million available in that fund, and $500,000 is a very, very small piece of the action. The county is interested in this project for two reasons. First, Deer Lodge County is actually one of the poorer counties in Montana. It has one of the lowest rates of per capita income and taxable value. And it has been subsidizing access to Lost Creek State Park for the benefit of the people that go there in the Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. The majority of the traffic on the road, particularly between May and November, are people going to and from the state park. Second, the county is interested in promoting growth in the tourist economy in southwestern Montana, and it believes that by paving the road, it'll stimulate more interest in the area and more use of the park. I'll stand for any questions. Please vote green.
Is there discussion? Is there discussion? Does the sponsor wish to close? The sponsor has closed. The question now arises in a motion of Representative Fitzpatrick that when the committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 375, it's recommended the same do pass. Those in favor of the motion vote aye, and those opposed vote no. Are there absentee votes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bishop votes aye. Representative Butcher votes aye. Representative Essman votes aye. Representative Kazmaier votes aye. Representative Weatherwax votes aye.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Chair, 58 representatives have voted aye, 42 have voted no.
House Bill number 375 has passed second reading. Members of the committee, you have before your consideration House Bill 377. The clerk will read the title of the bill.
Mr. Chair, House Bill number 377, introduced by Rexton, a bill for an act entitled An Act Establishing the Montana 250th Commission to Coordinate Statewide Efforts to Celebrate the United States Semi-Quincentennial, establishing membership and duties of the commission, providing an appropriation, and providing immediate effective date and termination date. Mr. Chair.
What is your pleasure, Representative Fitzpatrick? What is your pleasure, Representative Rexton? I apologize.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 377, that it recommend the same do pass.
Representative Rexton.
Mr. Chair and members of the body, House Bill 377 establishes a commission to coordinate statewide efforts to celebrate the 250th year of the U.S. Constitution. This bill establishes 11 members that will be appointed in early 2024. The commission will work with education institutions, historical preservation entities, civic organizations, tourism, arts, and heritage entities, veteran and military organizations, local, state, national, and tribal partners in collaboration with the Board of Public Ed, Office of Public Instruction, local schools, and commission partners. This bill helps to increase the participation in the U.S. Civics Test that's in 20-7-119, encouraging our high school students to take the U.S. Civics Test. It will increase proficiency in U.S. and Montana government and history. It will increase proficiency in the unique heritage of the American Indians as defined in Article 10, Section 1, Subparagraph 2 of the Montana Constitution. It will recognize school for outstanding achievement in civics. It will help to plan, coordinate, and implement a public awareness and participation in commemorating the 250th anniversary of the U.S. Constitution. And lastly, draw attention to the achievements, honors, innovations, and significant contributions of the people of Montana. Overall, $177,557 is projected to be appropriated from the general fund beginning early in 2024 through 2027 to complete this process of recognition. I ask for your green vote on this bill. Thank you.
Is there discussion? Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion, sponsor wishes to close. Sponsor has closed. Question now arises in a motion of Representative Rexton that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 377, recommended same do pass. Those in favor of the motion vote aye. Those opposed vote no. Other absentee votes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bishop votes aye. Representative Butcher votes aye. Representative Essman votes aye. Representative Kazmaier votes aye. Representative Weatherwax votes aye.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Chair, 98 representatives have voted aye, 2 have voted no.
House Bill number 377 has passed second reading. Members of the committee, you have before you for your consideration House Bill 380. The clerk will read the title of the bill.
Mr. Chair, House Bill number 380, introduced by Frazier, a bill for an act entitled An Act Establishing a Grant Program to Increase Community Shelter Capacity to Serve the Homeless Population, Establishing Criteria for Grant Awards, Providing an Appropriation, Providing Rulemaking Authority, and Providing an Effective Date and a Termination Date. Mr. Chair.
What is your pleasure, Representative Frazier?
Mr. Chair, I move when this committee does rise and report, after having had under consideration House Bill 380, that it recommend the same do pass.
Representative Frazier.
Mr. Chair and members of the beloved body, House Bill 380, an act establishing a grant program to increase community shelter capacity, homeless population, we're looking at appropriating some of our dollars because we're sitting on a surplus of funds. It's looking to address a dramatic increase in the number of Montanans who need a place to sleep, which sadly is a lot of our veteran population as well. We know that there's a housing crisis in our state. We've discussed bills dedicating a lot of money to different aspects of that crisis. This bill is asking for a relatively modest amount to help out with that, help get these folks back on their feet, help get them access to mental health services, substance use services, family care services, and helping elderly populations who are unhoused or at risk of being unhoused. And we missed something in the hearing on that. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would like to propose an amendment to House Bill 380, and move that House Bill 380 be amended and request that amendment HB 380.002.001 be posted and deemed read.
So ordered.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the body, so what this amendment does is, if you look at your amendment on there, 1 second. So on the last sheet, line 8, section C, information will be reported to the department. The department shall report to the Children, Families, and Health Human Services Interim Committee no later than August 30th, 2024, on the results of the grant program. So what we're looking at doing here with this is let's give this a shot, see how it works. With this amendment, we're adding a reporting requirement to see if this proposed legislation is working, and if it is working, then we can move forward with it next session, and if not, then we shift gears and look at different options. So with that, I would ask for a green vote on this amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Is there discussion on the amendment? Representative Nikolakakos. It's on the bill? Okay. Seeing no further discussion, the amendment sponsor wishes to close. Amendment sponsor has closed. There being no further discussion, the question now arises on the amendment of Representative Frazier. Those in favor vote aye. Those opposed vote no. Are there absentee votes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bishop votes aye. Representative Butcher votes aye. Representative Essman votes aye. Representative Kazmaier votes aye. Representative Weatherwax votes aye.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Chair, 96 representatives have voted aye, 4 have voted no.
Amendment 380.002.001 has passed. All right. So is there discussion on the bill as amended? No discussion? Representative Nicolakakis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the body. I rise in strong support of this legislation that came through HHS. And full disclosure, I'm a little biased because I spent a year with a mentally ill mom bouncing around homeless shelters. So I'll be honest, I'm all in on this bill. I understand I have a big heart, and even I'm getting tired of people coming with a hand open for more money. So I understand. What I will say is I think what might be happening with some folks here, and is we're watching what's happening in Washington, D.C. We're watching the printing press of money. We're watching our national debt go out of control. We're watching irresponsible government. We're reading that news. And then we're coming here into this body, and we're fighting Washington, D.C.'s dysfunction and Montana, their dysfunction. But we're doing everything right here, right? I spend a day voting for tax cuts for guys like me, for the most part. And that's fine. That's making smaller government. I agree to those policies. We balance our budget every 2 years with the help of the great representative from Conrad and the great representative from Big Fork. Every year we balance our budget, every session. We don't have the problems of the dysfunction of D.C. I don't think we should fight those battles here. This is a good bill. There's a big need right now. This isn't about warming huts with guys on long camping trips hanging out. These are shelters like the one in Great Falls, the Rescue Mission that supports this bill, and all around the state. Who are providing services to families, to single moms, and getting them some help. They're overwhelmed right now. This is a good bill. I'll be smashing this green light. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Is there further discussion? Representative Kearns.
Mr. Chair, question for the sponsor.
Does the sponsor yield?
I yield.
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
Mr. Chair, as I'm reading this bill, I'm looking at, other than the line 16, which talks about in-house treatment and case management services to address mental health and substance abuse orders, I guess my question is there some sideboards on this to help address and make sure that what is this grant funding is going to those services, which are making sure that those individuals are clean and sober before they're housed. Can you speak to that?
Representative Fraser.
Mr. Chair, members of the body, not quite sure how to answer your question. As far as sideboards go, I know that when it comes to mental health disorders and addiction treatment, a lot of it comes down to what kind of services are available, how much the person is investing in it, how big of a problem is in their life. I would imagine that, you might have one or two people that might not completely succeed through that treatment, but that's even with on-the-street programs and services. But there are a lot of folks who do utilize these services, get their lives back on track, and become happy, healthy, productive members of our society, help keep them out of, where I work, which is a big part of what this is directed at as well, is so they don't go out there and become an even bigger burden on our taxpayers. Mr. Chair.
Representative,
Mr. Chair, Mr. Chair, I'll speak to the bill.
Representative.
Mr. Chair, members of the body, when we talk about services and grant funding that's available to homelessness, I believe there is a huge need for making sure that we provide shelter for every individual, every Montanan. And yet, at the same time, We have to recognize the failed policies that are going on in our neighboring states like Washington and their Housing First program that is not putting any kind of sideboards on this to make sure that those people who are receiving these benefits are clean and sober. So with that, I'm just going to say no. This is not right for Montana, and I'd urge you to vote with me.
Thank you, Representative. Is there further discussion? Representative Durham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Speak to the bill.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I look outside, I realize it's inconvenient to be homeless in Montana. The experience I've had with some of the homeless in Montana, you know, we use the term Montanans, and I don't know what the definition is of a Montanan, but many of the exposure that I've had with homeless people within Montana, they were only here for part of the year. They come up to visit. One, it was December of 2021 that crashed his car driving drunk, and I drug him out of Dickey Lake. And to find out the rest of the story, that he typically spends the nights in a homeless shelter. They kick him, or they make him step outside throughout the day. He goes from one convenience store to the next, or he did, went from one convenience store to the next, getting a large beer at each location. By mid-afternoon, he was pretty well pickled and driving on our highways. Is he the example or the standard example of every homeless person? No. He's just one example. I see also here that we're going to allow federal funds to match it. And again, we think it's free money, $1 million federal dollars, $1 million of our dollars going to our local communities. And we think it has no effect on our daily lives. It was just over a month ago that my cousin was driving to the gym, 6:30 in the morning, and she was at a stop sign. One of our local homeless guys tries to get in her car. She ends up driving away, escaping him, but end up in a collision. The police found him, arrested him. Now he's in jail, and so we're back to paying for his stay in Montana. So this is not free money. I think the phrase from a movie that most of us know, Field of Dreams, if you build it, they will come.
Thank you, Representative. Is there further discussion? Representative Windy Boy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question for the sponsor.
Does the sponsor yield?
I yield.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I'm looking at the bill and the fiscal note both at the same time. When you go to page 2 of the bill, you go to line 3, and it says that include the availability of local and federal matching funds, which is, I assume, the amendment on this. And then going on the second page of the fiscal note there on the technical notes, where it says section 1.3c states that the grant application will include information on the availability of local matching funds. This is interpreted to mean the federal funds will not be allowable as a match for state funds. So I'm kind of seeing some contradictory language here. Can you kind of explain what that's about?
Representative?
Mr. Chair, Representative, that is a great question, and unfortunately, standby. Okay, so, the technical note in the fiscal note on page 2 is now incorrect because of the amendment on the bill, page 2, line 3, stating the availability of local and federal matching funds. So that was amended in committee. That technical note is now incorrect.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to speak on the bill. Regardless of
the, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the updated version of that fiscal note. I'm going to vote yes on this thing, and $1 million don't seem like a whole lot, but I think this is going to be a good investment overall at the end of the day. And I would support this the way it is, or I will also support this if it didn't have the matching funds. So this is a good bill for a good cause. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Is there further discussion? Representative Perry.
Mr. Chair, question for the sponsor.
Does the sponsor yield?
I yield.
Mr. Chair, sponsor. This sounds like a lot of money, but one of the things that I'm kind of seeing is there's only, that I know of, like six cities in the state that have shelters. So what are we doing for all the rural communities and all of the people that aren't in those six cities?
Mr. Chair, Representative, if they had homeless shelters, they would be able to apply for these. However, I can't do anything on the amount of homeless shelters that we have, but the ones that we do, they are struggling right now, so we're trying to help those folks out.
Thank you, Mr. Sponsor. Thank you, Chair.
Is there further discussion, Representative Nickel?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for the sponsor, please.
Does the sponsor yield?
I yield.
Representative?
If you can remind me, in committee, we did talk about the possibility of churches that are housing people that are homeless and families that are homeless, and they're providing a lot of these things on here as far as services and education. Are they also able to apply for these funds?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I do not believe that they are able to apply to get these funds because of their own restrictions that they have. However, they are in support of this legislation. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Is there further discussion? Representative Rexton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is for the representative in seat 96.
Wherever that is, with the yield?
I yield.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A lot of cities are giving a lot of money to housing. What are we doing for mental health to get them out of the situation that we're doing, since you're in charge of that committee that looks at such things?
Mr. Chairman, Representative from Polson, the story that I have to tell right now is we're not doing a lot of good things. We have a lot of people. I think the question that needs to be asked, for right now, we're going to need some bridge funding for these facilities, if you will. We can't handle every small town across Montana that might have a my community, for instance. I know there are a couple people that are homeless and find a place to sleep here, there, and everywhere. But we have to provide bridge funding as we go through the next calendar year in assessing the needs for mental health treatment. I think part of we had that bill on community benefits. I would encourage hospitals, churches, et cetera, to, if you encounter homeless people, and I was at the warming center in Kalispell on Monday, we need to ask those people if they want help, if they will allow us to help them help themselves, having those types of conversations with these people, whether they are willingly homeless, if they are homeless and mentally ill, how can we help those people? And I think the future is good for our communities to have a system. We had House Bill 362 a little bit ago. For the crisis intervention teams, we have grant funding right now for mobile crisis intervention teams that there are seven locations with other satellite locations that handle crisis intervention. The question is, what's the next step? We can stabilize people, but then where do they go? Do they go to the emergency room? I hope not. They probably go to the homeless shelters, but they can be a disturbance there. They can be a harm to themselves or others. So we're not in a good place right now. But hopefully, after this legislative session, we'll begin the assessment to find out what the mental health system needs are. I hope that answers your question.
Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is there further discussion? Representative Gillette.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Speak to the bill.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So I'm just thinking about in Section B, we already spend a tremendous amount of money on this population, in fact, millions and millions and millions of dollars. You might know in your own home community you have what are called HRDCs that work on homelessness. That's just one example of it. But in 2023, we sent out $22.5 million in grants. So that's just in 1 year. We also spend money on this population, and particularly with housing, in programs that are also funded in this same division, and just to name some of them. TANF helps support this. Also, we have assistance through SNAP, where food is going to homeless shelters with our SNAP program, and quite a bit of it. We then have energy assistance, and the energy assistance program specifically helps to weatherize homes so people aren't homeless. And then the other one, sorry, I'm just trying to find it, is through the HRDCs in 2022, 1,285 Montanans received rapid rehousing and homeless prevention assistance. So I would argue that we already have a significant amount of money being spent in this population, and I'm not sure that this bill is the right way to continue to meet those needs. I think we have a current appropriation process that we can work through. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Is there further discussion? Representative Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the body. Let's talk a little bit about our homeless population. I'm pretty much on a first-name basis with the majority of the homeless population in my community. I often have to wake them up when they're sleeping in the wrong areas. But that's, for a lot of them, it's not their choice. It's situations that got them there. And before this session, the Butte delegation met with many of the folks in our community that provide these services, and they told us flat out they need help. They have families sleeping in the lobbies of their places of business. We have homeless sleeping. We have to kick them out of the post office at night. We have to try to help to get them services throughout our community. And we have services in our community, but they need our help. And if this isn't an issue at the heart of your community, please come to my community and I'll take you around. And we can ask them the cities that they came from. Southwest Montana gets hit hard because of our proximity to the prison and our proximity to Warm Springs. So I'm telling you loud and clear, our community and our partners in the community that serve the homeless population, they're begging for help. Let's give them this little bit of help so they can continue doing the yeoman's work that they do each and every day to keep these people off of our streets, to help get them back as productive members of society. We talked a lot about mental health today, and that's just one of the things that gets reimbursed here. If you look at line 18, this talks about dealing with family care and other services that allow families to remain together. This also opens up money for programs serving the elderly population who are currently unhoused or at risk of becoming homeless. So when we talk about issues, let's talk about the full issues and not just one little piece that we choose to cherry pick out of a bill. Vote green.
Thank you, Representative. Is there further discussion? Representative Yakovich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to speak on the bill.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair and beloved body, this is a very important bill, and I know that you all have passion on it in different ways. I cannot help but thank 96, who really has a great vision to help solve a lot of these problems. And what we are giving already is a commendable. It's amazing how much we are investing. I was just in Billing, I was just in my town recently, walking downtown, went to the mission, met a lot of people on the street, know them, I know a lot of them. And yes, a lot of them are dealing with substance abuse and behavioral health. It's the bottom line. And yes, they don't just come from Billings, they come from all over the state. They come from all over coming to our city, our great city, the Magic City, but they need help. And so this bill is, what's really good about this bill, it's transparency. And that very good number, seat here, what number? 74, that he added that amendment, because as what others are asking, it's very important, right? Let's get more transparency. Let's find out if it's working or not. And again, as 96, I really believe, is really trying to drill down on this more. Let's be successful. This bill, I believe, will change lives. Yes, it is money being put into a lot of help, a lot of need. But as the bill presents, which is very important, people who come, usually who are inebriated, go to the crisis center or go to the emergency room. They don't actually go to the mission. Normally, unless it's a blue code, then they may go into some kind of low barrier shelter. But usually, if they are inebriated enough, they go to another location. They come into these missions, and I know I'm walking distance between two and three of them, is their heart is to not enable, but have them be successful. So what happens is they go into these missions and they try to get them on their feet and get them going. This investment here is getting counselors to help them, not just enable them and give them a shelter, but to get them on their feet so that they can become successful. Get them a home. Their effort is high. They make effort to be able to counsel them and get them where, in the areas that they need. So it's not an answer. It's not the magic wand. I get that, but I believe it's a good effort upon us as a body to do good. And yes, it's in the big cities, because we know where you go to the intersection of X, Y, and Z, and there's people asking for money on. So the problem is all over. But I believe in this bill. I believe it has the ability to excel people who are in need to get better, to get help, get therapy, and get counseling. So I rest. Mr. Chair, I do support this wholeheartedly. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Is there further discussion? Representative T. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This problem is different in each region, and that's kind of the issue we face. In the Flathead Valley, you're going to be hard-pressed to find families that are homeless, because we take care of our own. There's more churches in the Flathead than any place. What we have is an issue with the eight guys that are about my size that are over here from Seattle, just over the last week, they were just harassing, you know, my wife and kids in the supermarket. So there's different stages of homelessness. I would like to see this $1 million spent on bus tickets to get them out of here, because they're not the ones we want to help. We can take care of our own Montana people. The problem we have is by region, and that's the issue. I'm going to have to vote no on this, just because there are people that, if they need help, we're going to give them that help. But we have a whole bunch of people taking advantage of it in the Flathead, and bus tickets is what they need. Somewhere warm. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Is there further discussion? Further discussion? There being no further discussion, does the sponsor wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do. So to address a couple of points, sure, this might be a regional thing, and if there's a lot of community support for some folks and they're looking at maybe we should just do bus tickets, well, maybe those local churches should pool together some money and buy some bus tickets for those folks. Another point, we do have many shelters in the communities outside of the seven big cities. Those are usually HRDCs, domestic violence shelters, faith-based organizations, which, according to, from my subject matter expert, they would be eligible for funding for this. Nearly all, if not all, of the grants that one representative spoke about, the grants are federal ARPA dollars. When those dollars run out, these dollars that I'm looking at here are going to be more important than ever. So think of your neighbors. Think of the folks in your communities, the folks that are being forced out of their homes. Could be one of your family members. Could be a close friend, a relative, somebody. So we need to do something to help these folks out. This is a one-time only thing. It's not an ongoing amount of money that we're asking for. Definitely disagree with the statement of, if you build it, they will come. Let's help out the folks that really need the help, and get them back on their feet so that they can, you know, become productive members of society and raise their families and get the services that they need. So please vote green on this. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. A question now arises on a motion, Representative Fraser, that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 380, recommend the same do pass as amended. Those in favor of the motion, vote aye. Those opposed, vote nay. Are there absentee votes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bishop votes aye. Representative Butcher votes no. Representative Essman votes no. Representative Kazmaier votes no. Representative Weatherwax votes aye.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Chair, 57 representatives have voted aye, 43 have voted no.
House Bill 380 has passed second reading. Members of the committee, you have before you, for your consideration, House Bill 382. The clerk will read the title of the bill.
Mr. Chair, House Bill number 382, introduced by Oblander, a bill for an act entitled An Act Revising State-Level Strengthening Career and Technology Student Organizations Program, revising the allocation of funding between the Career and Technology Student Organizations and providing purposes for distributed funds, establishing reporting requirements, providing an appropriation amending section, and providing an effective date. Mr. Chair.
Representative Oblander, what's your pleasure?
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 382, that it recommend the same do pass.
Representative Oblander.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the body, welcome back. This is a great bill. This is a program that was started back in 2013. It's affectionately called CTSO, and it is a program designed to help juniors and seniors get skills in different trades and educational opportunities, such as Future Farmers of America, Business Professionals of America, Family and Consumer Sciences Education, Health Science Education, Skills USA, and Technology Student Association. And what this does is this bill, we want to expand this bill. It's been so successful that many of the juniors and seniors who get into the program find that they have careers. Not everybody wants to go to a four-year degree college. And this gives them exposure either in trades or in different educational opportunities to learn about different things and find out if that's a program for them or a job that they would like to do. It's been quite successful. When we had the hearing, we had at least 50 students who have been through the program or are in the program come through and testify to where it changed their lives. Excuse me, and allowed them to come out of their shells, to gain experience, to gain skills that they'll take with them for the rest of their life. We had one individual who got involved in robotics, and because of his efforts of learning and doing that, he got a full ride offer from Dartmouth to go to school. So it has very strong upward potential. It gives students a lot of opportunity to look at different things. I don't know about you, but when I was 16, 17 years old, I wasn't sure yet what I wanted to do. Something like this would have been great. I had mentors who showed me other things, but they weren't part of this program. So I would encourage you to think long and hard about training people to have life skills, and I would suspect that many of them would stay in Montana and help in our job situation. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Is there a discussion? Representative Thane.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The good bill sponsor did a wonderful job identifying the rationale behind the bill. I would simply say that this is critical. If we want to continue to foster development of individuals who will work in essential skill positions in Montana, this is the ticket. The student organizations afford those who are developing skills and knowledge in career and technical education courses to actually practically apply those skills. So I appreciate the sponsor bringing it forward. With that, Mr. Chair, I move that House Bill 382 be amended and that Amendment HB 382.2.1 be posted and deemed read.
So ordered.
Mr. Chair, members of the body, the amendment is a friendly amendment, and it seeks to accomplish really three things. If you look on page 2 of the amendment, the first is a date change. During the hearing in committee, I asked a question of a staff member from OPI, and based on that response, we did a conceptual amendment and changed the date. However, subsequent to that amendment, speaking with members of the leadership of student organizations, we determined that statutorily some things were identified in legislation that passed in 2013 that were important to retain. So it was their desire to change that date back to 2013. So that's the first thing this amendment accomplishes. The second is that there just needed to be some clarity around an expenditure. Currently, there's an allocation for the sponsors, the statewide sponsors of each of the seven organizations that amounts to $55,000. That amount has not been changed or updated for 10 years. So the amendment clarifies that the change to $75,000 is for each of the state-level sponsors of the student organizations. Finally, at the bottom of page 2, you'll see that there's a change in wording from apprenticeship to pre-apprenticeship. That's necessary because the state of Montana doesn't allow apprenticeships until somebody attains the age of 18. We're talking about juniors and seniors in high school who may not yet have attained that age. So it's more accurate in the bill to reference pre-apprenticeships. So with that, I urge a do pass on the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Is there further discussion, Representative Oldbinder?
Mr. Chair, just for the body's information, this is a friendly amendment, and it's a good change to the bill we have, and I would just recommend a do pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Is there further discussion on the amendment? Further discussion? All right. Do we... Sponsor wish to close? Okay. Sponsor has closed of the amendment. All right. The question now arises in a motion of Representative Fain that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration the amendment, those in favor of the motion vote aye. Those opposed vote no. Are there absentee votes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bishop votes aye. Representative Butcher votes aye. Representative Essman votes aye. Representative Kazmaier votes aye. Representative Weatherwax votes aye.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Chair, 100 representatives voted aye, 0 have voted no.
The amendment passes. Is there a discussion on the bill as amended? Seeing no discussion, does the sponsor wish to close? Sponsor has closed. The question now arises on the motion of Representative Oblender that when this committee does rise and report after having had into consideration House Bill 382, I recommend the same do pass as amended. Those in favor of the motion vote aye. Those opposed vote no. Are there absentee votes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bishop votes aye. Representative Butcher votes aye. Representative Essman votes aye. Representative Kazmaier votes no. Representative Weatherwax votes aye.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Chair, 89 representatives have voted aye, 11 have voted no.
House Bill number 382 has passed second reading. Members of the committee, you have before you for consideration House Bill 383. The clerk will read the title of the bill.
Mr. Chair, House Bill number 383, introduced by France, a bill for an act entitled An Act Establishing the Montana Hunters and Anglers Community Fund and Grant Program, providing legislative findings, establishing a donation mechanism, a grant review board, and a state special revenue account, authorizing a statutory appropriation of the revenue in the account, providing rulemaking authority, amending section, providing a delayed effective date. Mr. Chair.
Pleasure, pleasure, Representative France.
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee does rise and report after having under consideration House Bill 383, that it recommend the same do pass.
Representative France.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the body. It's appropriate that we had students from Westby, Montana here today up in far north, the northeastern part of the state, because really the idea for this legislation started in Westby. Some friends and I have hunted up in that country in Sheridan County for many years, and we wondered to ourselves how we could say thank you to the communities there. And so we put the hat in the middle of the bar, and everybody threw in a check, and then we wrote checks to the Westby schools and to the Plentywood schools. And what was great about doing that was the amount was a few hundred dollars, but it was the response. And the really heartfelt note we got back from the principal at Westby thanking us for recognizing the community, thanking us for the donation and saying it would be put to good use. And we got a similar note back from the Plentywood High School principal. And it's with that idea that I have introduced the Montana Hunters and Anglers Community Fund to really help build bridges between rural and urban Montana and to do it in a way that is entirely voluntary. What this bill would do is create a checkoff on the Montana conservation license that you buy before you get your hunting and fishing license. And if a hunter or an angler or anyone else buying the conservation permit wants to voluntarily make a contribution, they can check the box for the Montana Hunters and Anglers Community Fund. They can contribute 25 cents or $25 or $250. It's an entirely voluntary program. The money then would be dedicated to rural Montana communities and community organizations. It's really designed for those volunteer organizations that complement the for-profits that are on Main Street, that complement the governmental agencies that are working in these communities. But I think we all recognize that church groups and school groups and nonprofits are really essential in our bigger and smaller communities, and maybe more so in our smaller communities as they face the challenges of big box stores in our bigger communities, fewer and fewer businesses. Their community services are as equal or more important, yet the funding base is smaller. And so this is a way hunters and anglers that love to go to Ekalaka and love to go to Eureka in the fall or in the spring to fish can say thank you to those communities. I just wanted to give you a couple of statistics because I know we're not always appreciative of the groups that are out there. In Dawson County, for example, there are 62 nonprofits that would be eligible for grants from this program. But that's not even including the church groups and the school groups that aren't incorporated as nonprofit organizations. In Fergus County, there are 94 nonprofits. In Phillips County, 49 nonprofits that would be eligible.
One minute.
And these groups would have to submit a proposal. There are two types of grants, small grants under $2,000 for quick hits, larger grants up to $20,000. So there would be a scale. The grants would be given away by a board of directors that this body in the Senate would help create. We would appoint two members. The Senate would appoint two members. The governor would appoint three members seeking to build the community not only through the grants but in the appointments to that board. So with that, Your Honor, or Mr. Chair, I revert back to my courtroom days. I just say that that this bill was really broadly supported in the committee hearing. We had groups from the ag community, some that grow stock, some that grow cattle, some that are farm organizations. They all recognized the need here, but our hunting and fishing groups also came in. the whole spectrum of
Representative, I'm sorry, your time has expired.
All right, Your Honor, with that, Your Honor. I just want to bring a little levity to the body. With that, Mr. Chair, and if I need the basketball, I'll take it. Thank you, and I urge a green vote.
Somebody give Representative France the rock, wherever that basketball is. All right. Is there discussion? Representative Logie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and body. I think one thing you want to remember about this bill, it is volunteer. There is a lot, kind of a rift between landowners and sportsmen. It seems to get a little further and further, and this may help some of that if they can give something back to the communities besides just their footprints on the land. But like I say, keep in mind, this is a volunteer program. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Representative Rhonda Knutson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the bill sponsor's motivation. It's certainly a good idea to give back to the communities that host hunters and fishers, and I think saying thank you is great. But what I can't agree with is using a state agency to collect and redistribute those voluntary thank you donations that have been submitted. A better idea would be to establish a not-for-profit organization to serve as a clearinghouse and keep the state out of this. This would be a gain of function, expansion of authority, or mission creep for a state agency. We just heard the good representative in seat 77 say that asking for funding from a particular agency resulted in a hissy fit. That doesn't sound like a good model to replicate. Just say no to this bill.
Thank you. Is there further discussion? Representative Fielder.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to explain to the committee why I was a no vote in the Fish and Wildlife Committee on this bill, and it has to do with the fiscal note. If you look at line one on the fiscal note, it identifies that there's already four other programs that do about the same thing here. So this would be adding a fifth program on this checkoff list. These four programs donate about $187,000 a year, and this that's in line three there. And it says that when they put together this note, they said it's unsure of how much additional funding this program would provide because people are already donating to the other four programs that do the same thing. You flip over the fiscal note on line five there, it assumes that 40% of the total $187,000, which is being donated to the existing programs, would be received by this new fifth program. I don't see the math in that. Also, it provides a little over $11,000 to the Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks for this fifth program, in addition to the four programs that are already being provided. When I've hunted or fished on other people's property, I did voluntarily donate lots of stuff to them to keep that welcome mat open. And I don't think that this fifth program, in addition to the four additional programs, is needed. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Is there further discussion? Representative Walsh.
Mr. Chair, I think this is a great bill. I come from a small community that has a lot of fishermen that come in, and also a lot of hunters that come in. And we have a lot of small organizations. We just talked about the bill previously helping out the trades industry and those people. I think this bill will give an opportunity to help out 4-H kids, help out. We talk about homeless shelters. We all talk about all kinds of nonprofits that we have out there. And it, again, it's voluntary money, and I think a lot of people would appreciate the opportunity to help out those local communities that they come into, besides just going down to the bar and spending their money there. I think they would like to contribute and help out their local communities because they know how much we struggle out there. So I think definitely a strong yes. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Is there further discussion? Representative Jay Hinkle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to speak to the bill. I had, on the fence a little bit with this bill, but I decided absolutely in favor of it. And one of the reasons is because not so much in Montana, but outside of Montana, there's a very strong anti-hunting sentiment. And I think that outside groups and outside organizations spend a lot of money in Montana attacking hunting and fishing. And right now, we want to look for ways that shine a positive light on hunting and fishing and bring about that recruitment of young people into the sport. And when I look at this grant program, I mean, we put some safeguards in there in committee as far as, you know, different organizations that have engaged in lawsuits. They can't use this money. They can't use this money for advertising or advocacy or political activities. We want this grant program to be specific to communities and homegrown community organizations. But when those organizations would receive funds, they're receiving these donated voluntary funds from the hunting community in Montana. And I think that sheds a positive light on the hunters and anglers of Montana and ultimately will help hunting and angling and fishing in our state. So that's why I decided to be in favor of this bill, and I would urge a due pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Is there further discussion? Representative Perry.
Mr. Chair, question for the sponsor.
Will the sponsor yield?
I yield, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Representative.
Mr. Chair, sponsor. It was brought up that there's four other funds already. Is there like a sunset on this if like nobody's participating and it's just creating red tape that we're trying to get rid of? Is there a time when we look at this and say it's not working? Shall we eliminate it?
Representative, Mr. Chair. The answer is there's not a sunset, but I do think it's something that this body certainly should monitor. And if this fund is not working, I think because it's a voluntary fund, we say let's not continue it. We're doing this now with our license plates and putting a test, an income test. And I would speak... good representative to the four other funds, which both show how hunters and anglers look at these voluntary checkoffs, and I think speak to perhaps how FWP should look ahead. We have four funds right now. One is Hunters Against Anglers. One is called the Montana State Plan, which I haven't even been able to figure out what it does, a Warm Waters Fisheries Enhancement Program, and a Wolf Mitigation Fund. Last year, Hunters Against Hunger took in $93,000. The Montana State Plan took in $1,000. Warm Water Fisheries took in $10,000. And Wolf Mitigation took in $102,000. So as hunters and anglers go to buy their licenses, they're making decisions about which ones they want to contribute to. And the Hunters and Anglers, or the Hunters Against Hunger Fund, is overseen by a nonprofit, and they support the creation of this rural community fund because that's who they partner with in rural Montana to make sure that, that food is distributed. So I think if I were the department, I would be looking very carefully at the Montana State Plan Fund, which is bringing in almost nothing now. I would be looking very carefully at the Warm Water Fisheries Program, which isn't being supported by anglers, and I would be looking at the other two funds as real money makers for the purposes for which they were established. And I think the Hunters and Anglers Community Fund should have the same eye shade look at it after a few years to make sure it's accomplishing what we need to accomplish.
Thank you, Mr. Sponsor. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Is there further discussion? Further discussion? There being no further discussion, does the sponsor wish to close?
Mr. Chair, members of the body, I just would speak to the good representative from Sheridan County, Roosevelt County, and her concerns. We do already have these checkoffs on our state license. We do already have a mechanism, and we do already have a hunting and fishing community that is funding some of these programs through voluntary checkoffs. So it's a natural extension for the department to pick this up and facilitate it, even while it's volunteers in the hunting and fishing community and rural Montana organizations that are going to make this program work. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would urge a due pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. The question now arises on the motion of Representative France that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 383, recommend the same do pass. Those in favor of the motion vote aye. Those opposed vote no. Are there absentee votes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bishop votes aye. Representative Butcher votes no. Representative Essman votes no. Representative Kazmaier votes aye, or no, rather, correction. Representative Kazmaier votes no. Representative Weatherwax votes aye.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Chair, 71 representatives have voted aye, 29 have voted no.
House Bill number 383 has passed second reading. Members of the committee, you have before you for your consideration House Bill 393. The clerk will read the title of the bill.
Mr. Chair, House Bill number 393, introduced by Vinton, a bill for an act entitled An Act Generally Revising Laws Related to Establishing the Students with Special Needs Equal Opportunity Act and the Montana Special Needs Equal Opportunity Education Savings Account Program, establishing requirements for eligibility and allowable expenses, providing responsibilities for parents, school districts, and the superintendent of public instruction, clarifying the autonomy of the participating private schools, providing for the funding of special equal opportunity education savings accounts, establishing the Special Needs Equal Opportunity Education Savings Trust, providing an appropriation and statutory appropriation, providing rulemaking authority, providing definitions, amending section, and providing an effective date. Mr. Chair.
What is your pleasure, Majority Leader Vinton?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 393, that it recommend the same do pass.
Majority Leader Vinton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, I am pleased to bring House Bill 393, an act establishing the Students with Special Needs Equal Opportunity Act and the Montana Special Needs Equal Opportunity Education Savings Account Program. I'm going to just briefly describe the very important parts of this bill. Section 2 describes the purpose of this bill. In particular, I draw your attention to page 1, lines 23 through 27, highlighting the Montana Constitution, which gives authority to the legislature to provide for educational programs and institutions in addition to a basic system of public schools that will fulfill the goal of the people of our state and have an overall system of education that offers equal opportunity to all to reach their full educational potential. Again, on page 2, lines 2 and 3, you'll see the purpose of House Bill 393 is to ensure that Montana children have access to educational opportunities that will develop each child's full potential. Section 3, under definitions, subparagraph 6 defines qualified school, and subparagraph 7 defines qualified student under this act, which means a child with a disability under the Individual with Disabilities Act. Please note that nowhere in this bill there is any reference to Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act, and it is not included in this bill. Section 4 outlines the educational resources that are allowable under this act. Section 5 lists the responsibilities of parents who choose to utilize the Special Needs Equal Opportunity Education Savings Account Program. Sections 6 through 10 detail the responsibilities of the OPI, public school districts, and schools qualified to serve special education students under the terms of this act, as well as detailing how the funding and administration of funds will work. Why do we need these education savings accounts? All students are different, and their needs are similarly unique. Families need flexibility in assessing the best and most appropriate educational setting for their child. And with that, I ask for a do pass.
Is there a discussion? Representative Romano.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the body. I'm going to be a no on this bill today, and I want to tell you a little bit why. The state is tasked with providing access to quality education for all students. And while some families have the resources and time to look for other educational opportunities for their children, many Montana families do not. And they rely on and they depend on our public schools to fulfill their child's educational needs. Under this bill, students from low-income families will still not be afforded the opportunity of school choice and will be left behind at schools with less funding because this bill takes money out of public schools and sends it to private providers instead. We need to increase support for public schools in our state to ensure equity of services for all students, not remove their funding. This bill specifically states that private schools receiving funds from this account cannot be regulated by the state. Passing this bill is sending our taxpayers' money to for-profit institutions with no oversight. I want to be clear that I believe it is a parent's right and a choice to homeschool their child or send them to a private school, but that's a choice that they can and should make with their own money. We've heard on the floor here just earlier today that when public funds are used, public accountability and transparency must come with it, and I agree with that. This bill fails to ensure accountability and transparency and undermines our public schools. And that's why I'll be a no, and I encourage you to vote no with me.
Is there further discussion? Representative Thane.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just ask members of the body to take a look at the fiscal note, if you would, please, and in particular the technical notes, which begin on page 5. I won't read it all to you, but technical number 1 references Article 10, Section 6 of the Montana Constitution. And the last line of technical note number 1 is found on the top of page 6. And it says simply, House Bill 393 may violate this section of the Montana Constitution. Secondly, I direct your attention to technical note number 6, which references section 4, subsection 1K of the bill, where it discusses making payments to special education co-ops. And the technical note references that that's actually not permissible according to Montana statute. Finally, technical note number 7, the bill contemplates that money that would be generated by a local school in the form of A and B payments would then be directed to a special account at OPI to be used by parents who might wish to access this account. However, if you read the technical note number 7, it says that under 20-9-311 of MCA, A and B is based on enrollment accounts which take place twice a year. And if the student is not enrolled, they would not be counted. The school district would not, therefore, get that funding. So what essentially that means in practice is if the student is not enrolled, the school district doesn't get the funding, and any funding that is then sent to OPI would be local taxpayer dollars generated through either permissive or voted mill levies. So given those technical concerns, I will also be a no.
Thank you, Representative. Is there further discussion? Representative Knave.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the body, I'm going to stand in support of this bill. We really need to remember where school funding comes from. It comes from the people who pay the taxes. It does not belong to the state. It basically belongs to those parents who pay for the education of their kids, and they should always have the opportunity to make that decision. Now, in the case of special needs children, this is a very difficult job, and not all schools handle it well. Not all teachers can handle it equally. I am aware of a case of a special needs student who, when his mother went to pick him up, was locked in a closet in a public school. Now, this is not okay. And when the complaints went through, the teacher wouldn't do anything, the principal wouldn't do anything, nobody would do anything. And so there isn't always accountability. I believe that this funding should follow the student, and the student's parents should get to make the final decision of where their special needs child is going to get the very best care and education. I am for this bill.
Thank you, Representative. Is there further discussion? Is there any discussion? Seeing none, the sponsor wishes to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, members. I will add just a little bit to the discussion from my good friend from Columbus. public schools serve the vast majority of students in an excellent way. My children went to public schools, and we were very happy with their education, but that's not the case for every single student. And for those few students where this is not the right fit, those families should have the opportunity to direct their child and that child's funding to the setting that it is appropriate. The schools, yes, they'll lose some of their A and B funding, but they're not providing services to that student anymore. I urge a due pass on this bill, and let's speak up for our students with special needs. Thank you.
Question now arises on the motion of Majority Leader Vinton that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 393, recommend the same do pass. Those in favor of the motion vote aye, and those opposed vote no. Are there absentee votes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bishop votes no. Representative Butcher votes aye. Representative Essman votes aye. Representative Kazmaier votes aye. Representative Weatherwax votes no.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Chair, 64 representatives have voted aye, 36 have voted no.
House Bill number 393 has passed second reading. Members of the committee, you have before you for your consideration House Bill 520. The clerk will read the title of the bill.
Mr. Chair, House Bill number 520, introduced by Logie, a bill for an act entitled An Act Requiring a Study on the Effects of Private Ponds on the State, Permitting and Options to Mitigate Negative Impacts, Including Invasive Species and Threats to Wild Fish and Aquatic Resources, Assigning the Study to the Environmental Quality Council, Establishing Reporting Requirements, Providing an Appropriation, Providing for Contingent Voidness, and Providing an Immediate Effective Date and Termination Date. Mr. Chair.
It was your pleasure, Representative Logie.
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 520, that I recommend the same do pass.
Representative Logie.
Mr. Chair and the body, what this bill is, it's asking for a pond study by EQC. A lot of us are seeing a lot of people moving into the state. And with moving into the state, they all have a different idea what they want to see in front or behind their house or in the field in front of their house. And a lot of times, with that mountains in the background, they want to have a pond there. Well, what we're finding with them building ponds, there are rules, permits about getting a pond. Most of them don't know those rules. They're building a pond. They may be putting water into it from their well, and the permit on their well probably isn't for a pond, and that can lead to depletion of the aquifers, and then they can also, they want to put their fish in. Well, there's a tough time getting Montana native fish. The hatcheries are working behind times, so they'll bring in fish that are not natives that can do damage. The aquatic invasive species, it leads to a spread of that. Some of these ponds are built to have an overflow that goes into a stream, and that adds that non-native fish or the aquatic invasive species to go into the streams. And the impacts that these ponds also have on their neighbors can actually take out a lot of agricultural production. If they're depleting the aquifers, the neighbors aren't able to irrigate their crops. You have evaporation coming off these ponds that also depletes that aquifer. And so just by having a study to try and catch up on what's going on, and it would be especially to add some education to the folks that are coming in and to take care of our waters. Right now it's $10 for a 10-year permit to get a pond permit, and they can't even do the administration for that cost. So all in all, if we had a study to take care of this to help preserve our waters, it's not to stop necessarily the ponds, but it's to do our water rights and do our waters a favor and have some education and do everything the right way. Please support this.
Thank you, Representative. Is there any discussion? Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The good sponsor, my seatmate here, I was looking at his bill, and I noticed that there was no co-sponsors on it, which made me feel kind of sad. So I'm going to go ahead and give him my sympathy vote today, and I hope you do too.
Thank you, Representative Green. Is there further discussion? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to rise as a strong supporter of this bill. In addition to what the sponsors said, there's a number of ponds being constructed or have been constructed where major stream flows have been diverted into the pond to provide the water. And depending on the base under the pond, that may interrupt the stream flow for up to a couple of years. And really, it has a nasty effect on downstream users for livestock and irrigation. And so I'm a strong yes on this, and I encourage you to be the same.
Thank you, Representative. Is there further discussion? Representative Knave.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a quick question for the sponsor.
Will the sponsor yield?
I sure will.
Okay. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Sponsor, quick question. I know of a pond, and it's not in Columbus because, trust me, we don't have groundwater, where during construction of the home, there was a hole not very deep that was dug that naturally filled with water. So they left it there. Is that the kind of a pond that is a problem?
Representative Logie.
Mr. Chair and Representative, it can be a problem because you don't know what the effect it may have downstream if you have the water going underground and coming out someplace else, if it's formed a natural pond. The ones we're really trying to address are the ones that are like the stock ponds and the fishing ponds. It's depending on what is downstream from what you're talking about. If you can cause erosion downstream because they made a little pond, you would have to at least get a 310 permit, even for something like that, technically. But it depends on the size of it and how it looks. It's you can take a backhoe and dig three buckets and have a pond, and that wouldn't be a problem unless you put some goldfish in it and let them get out.
Representative Knave.
Thank you, Mr. Sponsor. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Is there further discussion? Representative Jay Hinkle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would the sponsor yield to a question?
Will the sponsor yield?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative. As I was reading through this on page 2, line 14, well, let me start on line 8 in subsection 2 there. It says the study must examine, so we're examining these things in that section. But then on 14, it says including legislation. And I can understand examining, you know, our state protocols on this and regulations, but do you have an idea of what type of legislation you would see come out of the committee? Because I don't see in the bill a direction for legislation. Just what are your ideas on what legislation would come out?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative, in leading into that where it says a report its findings and recommendations, including legislation. So I would think if they came out of a report that said certain kind of soil conditions, they won't even allow a pond, it may be some legislation like that. It would be, that's part of what the study is about, to try and develop the kind of legislation that would protect our waters, but yet still give people the right to put in their ponds and fish if they do it properly. Just a guideline, basically.
Okay.
That's what I would see.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could just speak briefly to the bill.
Representative Hinkle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Body, I'm probably going to be a soft no on this, and I think it's because of that freedom, independent nature that I have, and private property rights, and I gather this is an interim study. If legislation was proposed, it would still have to go through this body. But it seems like, you know, when it comes to our freedoms, we always have government sniffing in ways that they can restrict that and take that away and put more regulations in. And I do understand. I mean, I worked for years in fisheries, and I mean, there is a whole process in the state right now with fish, wildlife, and parks. If people want to get fish and put them in their ponds, they have to get those ponds approved. They have to have particular types of screens on those ponds to make sure that fish can't escape the ponds. And I'm sure that's some of the stuff that we'll be looking at and the effectiveness of it. But I am a little worried about, you know, excessive regulations and government getting more and more into people's private property. And as you know, we have certain federal pushes in that realm to start regulating surface waters of all types. So it just causes me a little bit of concern. Again, it's an interim study. Probably doesn't matter that much, but I'll probably oppose it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Is there further discussion? Is there further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, does the sponsor wish to close?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and body, I too have a great respect for private property rights, and that's one of the reasons why I think this study isn't a bad idea, because you're invading on some of your neighbor's property rights by some of your actions, and we already have, like I said, we have the 310 law, we have some pond permits that are required, and I think in bringing out this study, it might be more important to come up with an education process so that when these people are coming in from out of state or moving from town out into the country, they understand some of the burdens they're putting on their neighbors, and maybe the legislation that could come out of it would be to say, let's just do a little better education process so people coming to Montana realize how important that water is to everyone and the negative impacts if you're doing the wrong thing on, even if it's your own land, but the impact it could have on your neighbors. And so I don't get as scared about the legislation. I think it's, but I do see that there are a lot of people that are doing things that are negatively impacting our waters and the fisheries as well. And I think that's what this study is all about, to just try and correct some of those things that may be happening right now without the heavy hand, while we can still do it with the light hand. I'd ask for a green, please.
Thank you, Representative. The question now arises on the motion of Representative Logie that when the committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 520, recommend the same do pass. Those in favor of the motion vote aye. Those opposed vote no. Are there absentee votes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bishop votes aye. Representative Butcher votes aye. Representative Essman votes aye. Representative Kazmaier votes aye. Representative Weatherwax votes aye.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Chair, 70 representatives have voted aye, 30 have voted no.
House Bill 520 has passed second reading. The chair recognizes Majority Leader Vinton.
Mr. Chairman, I move the committee rise and report.
You've heard the motion of of Majority Leader Vinton. All those in favor say aye. All opposed say no. The ayes have it, and is so ordered.
Mr. Speaker, we, your committee of the whole, having had under consideration business on second reading, recommend as follows.
Mr. Speaker, I move adoption of the committee report.
You've heard the motion to adopt the committee report. All those in favor vote aye. And those opposed vote no. Clerk, record the vote.
Mr. Speaker, 91 representatives have voted aye, 3 have voted no.
Committee report has been adopted. Thank you, Representative Deming. Order business number 8, third reading of bills.
None, Mr. Speaker.
Order business number 9, motions. Majority Leader Vinton.
Mr. Speaker, I move to re-refer House Bill 346, revise the Tribal Computer Programming Scholarship Program, to the Appropriations Committee. Mr. Speaker.
Without objection, so ordered.
Mr. Speaker, I move to re-refer House Bill 352, provide targeted interventions to support third grade reading proficiency, to the Appropriations Committee. Mr. Speaker.
Without objection, so ordered.
Mr. Speaker, I move to re-refer House Bill 380, establish a grant funding program to support homelessness care providers, to the Appropriations Committee. Mr. Speaker.
Without objection, so ordered.
Mr. Speaker, I move to re-refer House Bill 382, revise education laws related to career and technology student organizations, to the Appropriations Committee. Mr. Speaker.
Without objection, so ordered.
Mr. Speaker, I move to re-refer House Bill 383, establish the Montana Hunters and Anglers Community Fund, to the Appropriations Committee. Mr. Speaker.
Without objection, so ordered.
Mr. Speaker, I move to re-refer House Bill 393, establish the Students with Special Needs Equal Opportunity Act, to the Appropriations Committee. Mr. Speaker.
Without objection, so ordered.
Mr. Speaker, I move to re-refer House Bill 520, interim study of private ponds, to the Appropriations Committee. Mr. Speaker.
Without objection, so ordered. Seeing no more motions, order business number 10, unfinished business.
None, Mr. Speaker.
Order business number 11, special orders of the day.
None, Mr. Speaker.
Order business number 12, announcement of committee meetings. Representative Gunderson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Time to go to work for House Natural Resources. Three bills Monday, 3 o'clock, room 172.
Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Human Services, let's try to take roll at 410. We have one bill.
Representative Regeer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Judiciary, Monday morning, 8 a.m.
Representative Dooling.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House State Administration, Tuesday morning, 9 a.m.
Representative Brewster.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Local Government, Thursday, March 16, 3 p.m. Three bills.
Representative Marshall.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Business and Labor, Monday morning, 8 a.m. Also a reminder, subcommittees Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, 8 a.m. for House Bill 87, House Bill 152, House Bill 137. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Logie.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Transportation will not meet until Wednesday afternoon.
Representative Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Appropriations goes back in at 4 o'clock to finish off Section E.
Representative Zolikoff.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. No House energy this afternoon.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. No House education this afternoon. We'll meet Monday at 3, 4 bills.
Representative Bishop, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. Speaker, I request to be off the record and out of the journal for the purpose of an introduction, please.
So ordered.
Thank you. Members, even though I was proxied, I've been around. I had to be in a meeting earlier, but you guys took so long today that it gave time for my very favorite person in the world for the last 30-plus years and three kids to arrive. Please meet my husband, Mr. Storrs Bishop.
Welcome to the House. Representative Green, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I request to be off the record and now the journal for a purpose of an introduction.
So ordered.
Mr. Speaker, members of the floor, in the gallery today, we have the Chief Financial Officer for Littlehorn State Bank. She's also the head of the FFA Alumni Association, the 4-H superintendent, the fair superintendent, and she happens to be the person that actually dresses me, my wife, Dana Green.
Welcome to the House. Speaker Pro Tem Knutson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wish to be off the record and out of the journal for an announcement, please.
So ordered.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is your final reminder. You need to pick up your two train tickets today by close of business in the chief clerk's office, 5 p.m., or they will be up for redistribution. Final reminder.
Majority Leader Vinton.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the House adjourn and reconvene Saturday, the 48th legislative day, at 8 a.m.
All those in favor say aye. All those opposed, no, and the ayes have it, and the House will reconvene at 8 a.m. Saturday, March 11th. The House is adjourned.